The floor, sir.
Thank you very much indeed, Mr. Chairman. Good afternoon. Good afternoon to all colleagues. I'd like to make a number of points on science and technology issues and their place in the Convention. Just to stress the fundamental point that for us, science and technology underpins the Convention in its entirety. In a sense, it is neutral as it supports all of the articles of the Convention. We can't seriously discuss, assess, interpret without a firm and sound grounding in the science and technology and indeed the engineering aspects of progress. It is also abundantly clear that there are enormous benefits, actual potential, and indeed imminent from developments in science and technology that we've heard about at this meeting and previously. And to be clear, it's not a case of obstructing these developments. These are of great and enormous benefit to all humanity. But we also have to recognize that inherent in the technology, there are also potentials for risks that we can't ignore. So what is the role of a science technology review process? It's to look at the risks which may have implications for Article 1 of the Convention, Article 3 or Article 4. It may be as a result of such reviews, we might have to think about amending our national legislation, for example, in light of changes. That would be a national decision, and a scientific review would inform that process. There are also likely to be enormous benefits to help with Article 6, Article 7, Article 10. Developments in new vaccines, diagnostics, are clearly going to be of enormous value to support Article 7 and 10. It's not a question of preventing these or any subtle way of introducing a non-proliferation regime or element to this. You'll never hear the UK use that word in the context of science and technology review. Therefore, it's not a question of controls. When we're dealing with science and technology, we must also recognize very clearly that issues and problems may not always be clear. There is ample scope for genuine scientific difference of opinion because the interpretation of the evidence may not always be clear. There may be ambiguities and uncertain implications from these developments. That is the case, it's important to know. At state party level. And in this context, very early consideration of potential issues helps to improve understanding, and it avoids perhaps the kind of emotional reactions we saw to the gain of function debates, which we did discuss in here a couple of years ago. So there are no surprises, no shocks. And this leads into how a science and technology process ought to function. It has to have two essential components. One is that there's a directed element to it, that the states parties have a very specific question or set of questions they would like some advice on. So the direction to the scientific review process is please address these questions and provide us with a report about what this might mean for us and the Convention. But it's also important that the scientific and technical review process itself has the freedom to identify issues on its own, because at the political policy level, these sorts of things may not be clear, but it may be clear to the scientists, technologists, and engineers who can say, here's an issue you haven't thought about. We think perhaps you need to give this some policy consideration. Of course, any decisions on actions that we'd have to take collectively or nationally would be a policy matter for a policy body to decide upon. Would only be ever be recommendations emerging from a science technology process. Now, the question was raised this morning as to why do we need to improve on what we had the last time round? Well, we see, and others have as well, a number of shortcomings and limitations in how we structured our approach to science and technology in the last intersessional programme. Let me outline a few of those. We had a wide scope and broad-based topics, but frequently we didn't have the time to give them a proper discussion. We didn't find a way of directing our discussions on key issues to address. Only a handful of states' parties contributed working papers and presentations. The ISU's background work was limited by the resource available, made more acute by the gap in staffing, and of course this was a point on staffing issues that was highlighted in the ISU's report to the review conference process. Academic events that were set up to consider relevant advances that were relevant to the convention had limited funding and limited support. The various scientific guests of the meeting were not perhaps directed clearly enough to focus on the specific implications of the convention. Many of the side events on science and technology issues that were held in the last programme did generate quite a lot of in-depth discussion, but we didn't really have a way of getting that information and the results of that information discussed in this bigger room, let alone any consensus view on it. So there are a number of reasons why the way we looked at it the last time round had a number of significant shortcomings, which is why we need to move to a better approach. My final set of comments, Mr. Chairman, concern what we see is a considerable amount of common ground on science and technology issues, on many of the aspects, some of which I've discussed in my intervention this afternoon. We would certainly endorse the position or suggestion rather made by our Russian colleagues this morning that those who have got ideas on science and technology review processes should get together to work out a common approach. We know there are perhaps one or two issues where we have a difference, and perhaps the only really important one is on the composition. But it seems to us that this would clearly be one of those sorts of deliverables, sir, that you're looking for the review conference. So I shall end my comments there. Thank you very much.